So what I'd like to do tonight, since the halachic man has to be a picture, you have to have a vision of who he is and what his personality is like, I'd like to review a little bit some of the pictures and some of the stories that the Rav tells in Ish Halacha that perhaps could give us a vision of the personality of Ish Halacha, what he stands for, what his central ideas are and his concepts are. And what I'd like you to do is if you could take out a piece of paper and perhaps you could write in, like after each story, perhaps you could write a little bit of a word or a concept, you know, that could define a concept or a personality trait or a vision. We'll begin with two stories of the Vilna Gaon on page 30 in the English translation. The first story is about how the Vilna Gaon, just before his death, clutched the tzitzis of his garment. He wept and explained, "How beautiful is this world, for with one penny a person can acquire eternal life." And this is the Mishnah of Yofesh Ha'achas Bolam Hazem Mikol Chai Olam Abba. That's one story of the Gaon. The second story of the Gaon, on the same page, a Polish woman of noble birth demanded as purchase price for the fresh, green, moist myrtles that grew in her garden the reward that was reserved for the Gaon for the performance of the commandment. So that was the Tanai. She'd only sell him the Adasim if he would give her the Schar in Olam Abba for this mitzvah. And the Gaon wholeheartedly conceded and fulfilled her request, and he transferred to her the reward for the commandment of taking the four minim. And on that Sukkot, according to the legend, he was exceedingly joyful. And he told his students, "All my life I grieved, when would I have the opportunity of fulfilling a commandment without receiving a reward, in order that I might thereby fulfill the injunction of Antignos Ich Socho, Al Tiyu Kavodim Amshamshas Es Rabam Amanas L'Kavul Pras, but Shalom Amanas L'Kavul Pras. Now that I have this opportunity, should I not fulfill this commandment with gladness and joy?" And we have a story of Reb Chaim on page 35, in which Reb Chaim disagrees with that view that on Yom Kippur we feed the sick who is in danger of dying pachos mikishur, smaller amounts of food. Rather, he instructed those who were taking care of the sick on Yom Kippur to serve him a regular meal, just as they would on any other days. And when Rav Moshe Soloveitchik was about to travel to Rasayin, a town close to Kovna, to take up a rabbinical post, Reb Chaim took him aside and said, "I command you to follow my view regarding a sick person in danger on the Day of Atonement for saving a life overrides all the commandments, and its far-reaching effects are indicative of the high value which the halacha attributes to one's earthly life." In other words, Reb Chaim was very makpid and very machmir on pikuach nefesh. And that's the instruction that he gave to his son when the latter took up a post in a town in Lita. What else? Reb Chaim, and this you'll see on page 36, the Gaon of Vilna, the Brisker Rav, Reb Chaim, Reb Moshe Soloveitchik, Reb Elia Pruzhin, Reb Elia Feinstein, never visited cemeteries unless they absolutely had to. So that Reb Chaim was opposed to visiting cemeteries. Another story, which we didn't get to yet, is on page 95, which I again think indicates something about the personality and the vision of the Ish Halacha of Reb Chaim. Once, two Jews died in Brisk on the same day. In the morning, a poor shoemaker who had lived out his life in obscurity and poverty died. At noontime, a wealthy, prominent member of the community passed away. According to Halacha, in such a case, the one who dies first must be buried first. That's the Halacha of Ein Over and Al Mitzvahs, etc. However, the members of the burial society, who had received a handsome sum from the heirs of the rich man, decided to attend to him first, despite the fact that he had died later. For who was there to plead the cause of the poor man? Meaning no one was there. When Reb Chaim was informed about the incident, he immediately dispatched a messenger of the court, of the Beis Din, to warn the members of the burial society to desist from their disgraceful behavior. The members of the burial society, however, refused to heed the directive of Reb Chaim and began to make the arrangements for the burial of the rich man. Reb Chaim then arose, took his walking stick, trudged over to the house of the deceased, and chased all the attendants outside, all the Chevra Kadisha. He threw them out. Reb Chaim prevailed. The poor man was buried before the rich man, but Reb Chaim's enemies multiplied and increased. A similar kind of story we find on page 90. I hope you remember this story. Once Reb Chaim of Brisk attended a conference of outstanding Torah scholars in St. Petersburg. The item on the agenda was the question of uncircumcised infants. Should their names be entered into the official register of the Jewish community? The rabbis all declared, it is certainly forbidden to register them, for they are not circumscribed. This was a tactic to try to pressure the assimilationists to agree to have their children circumcised. Reb Chaim arose at the meeting, and he declared, my masters, please show me the halacha, which states that one who is not circumcised is not a member of the Jewish community. I am well aware that a person who is not circumcised may not partake of sacrifices, he cannot enter into the Mikdash, and eat kachim, but I am unaware that he is devoid of holiness belonging to the Jewish people. To be sure, if he comes of age and he does not circumcise himself, he's liable to karis. However, one who eats blood is also chayv karis. One who bites l'shabbos chayv misa. And yet, you treat the uncircumcised infant with such stringency, and yet the Sabbath violator is so lenient. You're willing to register him. On the contrary, this infant has not yet sinned at all, except that his father has not fulfilled his obligation. And the Rav adds to the story, from a political and practical perspective, as an emergency medicine, there's no doubt that the majority of the Rabbanim were correct. But on the basis of pure halacha, Reb Chaim was correct. He would not sacrifice halachic truth for the sake of realizing even the noblest of ideals. On page 73, my father related to me that when the fear of death would seize hold of Reb Chaim, he would throw himself, heart and mind, into the study of the laws of Olos and Tumas Nes. And these laws, revolving about such difficult and complex problems as, and he gives a whole list here, defilement of a grave, defilement of a tent, blocked up defilement, into position before defilement, a vessel with a tight-fitting cover, etc., etc., would calm the turbulence of Reb Chaim's soul, would imbue him with a spirit of joy and gladness. Reb Chaim was opposed to the Mussar movement. Take a look on page 74. When Reb Itzel Blazer, or Reb Itzel of Petersburg, came to visit Volozhin Yeshiva and try to impact on Reb Chaim and the Netziv to admit the Mussar program of Yisrael Salanter into the Yeshiva Volozhin, Reb Chaim was opposed to it. And the reason why is because the Musar movement, at that time, in its infancy, in its early development, had a different perspective, a perspective that's much, much more reminiscent of, or reflective of, the universal homo religioso than the philosophy and the outlook of the Ish Halakha. There was a lot of self-negation, self-appraisal, consciousness of sin, reminding us of the day of death. And Rabbi Issel Blaser, in order to prove his point, he quoted a Gemara in Brachos that said a person should Liolam Yargis Adam Es Yetzer Atov Al Yetzer Ra, and if he doesn't succeed in overcoming the Yetzer Ra, then what should he do? And the Gemara in Brachos on Daf Hey finally says Maskirin Lo Yom Hamisa. So you see that our approach to Musar is the correct one. And on that, Reb Chaim replied, if a person is sick, then we provide some heavy medicine. Do you remember the example Reb Chaim gave?
Castor oil.
However, it is certain that a healthy person who ingests castor oil will become very sick. So therefore, if the evil impulse meets you, if you're sound in spirit and soul, if your consciousness and character are intact, occupy yourself with the Torah. Mashcheilu Beis HaMedrash. Get involved in Torah study and creation of Torah. This is the most effective remedy to the ongoing battle against the Yetzer Hara. If you're spiritually sick, then, you know, Nichnasa Bo Ruach Shtus, a fit of madness has seized hold of you, then you need something more powerful than Torah. You need some sort of drug that's designed for the very ill. Is therefore Maskirin Lo Es Yom HaMisa. Said Rav Chaim, we here in Valojin, Baruch Hashem, are healthy in spirit and body. We're whole in our Torah. We don't need castor oil. If you and Kelm and Kovner feel compelled to drink those bitter drugs, drink them to your heart's content. But don't invite others to dine with you. Another story about Rav Chaim, which I think is very interesting, is, so let's just go over the stories that we had so far. Number one, when fear of death would overcome Reb Chaim, what would he do? He would learn Olos. Okay, if there was an issue about uncircumcised children, as Reb Chaim would say, they're not excluded from the Jewish community. That's the pure halacha. When it comes to the Musa movement, Reb Chaim felt that it introduced a very strong drug that's fit for sick people, but not for healthy people. And he felt that the Muslim movement was inculcating a certain fear of death, a certain despondency, and emotional sensitivity that's foreign to those who are healthy in halacha. Reb Chaim was opposed to visiting cemeteries unless it was absolutely necessary. When it came to two Jews that died in Brisk, Reb Chaim took a stance. He was not willing to bend, even for the sake of someone who was very wealthy in the community, very prominent. It didn't matter. The halacha was that he who dies first gets buried first, and if the poor person died first, that's who's going to be buried. And Reb Chaim felt that that was his responsibility to stand up for the halacha. So what concepts do we see, what vision do we have of the personality of the Ish Halacha as far as Reb Chaim embodies, or Reb Chaim is the paradigm of an Ish Halacha?
Well, Halacha is king of everything else.
Correct. Number one, the Halacha doesn't bend. It's not anything less than truth, and truth doesn't bend. Take a look, if you will, on page 91. And here, page 90. And here we have the story of Reb Chaim with the uncircumcised children, that Reb Chaim voted and insisted that they be registered. On page 89, halachic man does not quiver before any man. What does that sound like to you? A pasuk in Chumash, a lav in the Torah. Halachic man does not quiver before any man. And what's that called, Losa? Excellent, Losa. Guru Vibneish. So one thing about Reb Chaim's personality and the centrality of halacha is Losa Guru Mipnei Ish. Halachic man on the bottom of 90 implements the Torah without any compromises or concessions. Because precisely such implementation, such actualization is the ultimate desire. The fondest dream of the Ish halacha. In other words, man creates halacha and then implements halacha. And therefore the halacha reigns supreme. Here's an interesting story about Reb Chaim on page 91. My uncle Reb Meir Berlin, that's Bar Ilan University is named after him, told me that once Reb Chaim of Brisk was asked, what is the function of a rabbi? Did you ever think of that question? What is the function of a rabbi? You probably get five Jews in a room, you'll get 25 opinions, right? So Reb Chaim's answer was to redress the grievances of those who are abandoned and alone, to protect the dignity of the poor, to save the oppressed from the hands of the oppressor. Interesting. We're not talking about paskening halachas. We're not talking about giving shiurim. You know, some rabbanim get so involved in setting up all these different organizations and making, you know, all that administrative stuff, the red tape. That's not what it's all about. The function of a rav is to protect the dignity of the poor, of the underprivileged. And I was fascinated by this story because if you take a look in the Rambam, in Hilchas Melachim, this is in Perek Dalet Halacha, I think it's Halacha Dalet, when the Rambam defines the function of a king in Israel, he says the following. Let's see if I can find this. He says, "Ubakol at the end of Perek Dalet Milchus Melachim, Ubakol Yimasav L'Shem Shamayim, V'tiyah Machshavto U'Magamoso." All his thoughts and his goals, Laharim Das Ha'Emes. He's referring to Halacha, meaning the supremacy of Halacha. Number two, U'Lemalos Ha'Olam Tzedek, and to fill the world with justice. The Lishbar Zroa Harishayim. You know who these Rishayim are? Who are these Rishayim that the Rambam speaks about that the Melech has to break their powerful arm? Those are people who oppress the poor. Those are people who take advantage of their positions of power in politics, of their wealth, and they subjugate others. And they make life miserable for others. And I believe that the Rav, either consciously or subconsciously, in telling this story about Reb Chaim's definition of the function of a Rav and his primary goals, is really telling us that the Rav in his community is like the Melech in Israel, and his goal has to be, number one, Laharim Das Ha'emes, and number two, Tzedek Ba'olam, and number three, Lishbar Ezroa Rishoyim. And that's what Reb Chaim did. Which stories about Reb Chaim would express this same idea that what he felt was his job as a Rav, in the case of Brisk, was to redress the grievances of the abandoned.
Two dead people.
Correct, the two dead people. Then which burial should come first? You know, the heirs of the rich guy were paying off the Chevra Kadisha, the Holy Burial Society. Maybe they were a little bit less than holy. And Reb Chaim stood up and he said, no. What else? What other story? The underprivileged or whatever. For the sake of fairness and justice.
The kids with the bris milah.
Exactly, the kids with the bris milah. This is the same idea. The Reb Chaim says, where does it say that a child without a bris milah is not part of Klal Yisrael? Then we have another vision of the Ish Halacha. If the homo religioso is melancholy and is solemn and he's thinking about death, What is the ish halacha thinking about?
Life.
Ubacharta b'chaim, the love of life. Embrace life. And which life? Not the life out there in the supernal realms of transcendentalism, but the life on this concrete real world. And which stories would indicate love of life? What was Reb Chaim's...
Not visiting cemeteries.
Not visiting cemeteries. What else? What did he say?
Musa movement.
The Musa movement that would get you into this Matzkirlos Yom HaMisa. What else? What was Reb Chaim's last Tzavah to Reb Moshe when he went out, his son Reb Moshe, when he went out? Correct. To feed the Chola a regular meal. I once told you the story that when my wife was pregnant and I asked him about Yom Kippur, and the Rav said if she sees these symptoms, then she should eat. So I said, what should she eat? You know, it says in Shulchan Aruch, Pachas Mikshir, he says, Kisuda Shlomo Melech B'Shaita. There's no Yom Kippur for her. And Reb Chaim, the light that shines under Reb Chaim's legs, on his feet, is Lo Sagur Mipneish, the emes of Halacha, and therefore, he's not going to budge. No concessions.
Do we pass him like that, by the way?
It depends who your posek is. You know? Yeah, I think I told you once the story of Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky that I heard from my friend Rabbi Shurin. When Rabbi Yaakov was a Rav back in Lita, before the war in Tzitavyan, there was a person in the community who came to ask him about whether he should fast on Yom Kippur. And after conferring and getting the opinion, the advice of one of the local doctors, he told the guy he has to eat on Yom Kippur. And the man didn't listen to what Rav Yaakov said, and he fasted, and he died 3 days later. Rav Yaakov, according to the story that I heard, check it out, I don't know if it's accurate, but I heard a story, Rav Chaim refused to attend his funeral. And that led to the downfall, because the people couldn't tolerate it. But Yaakov felt he was ma'avid atzmo l'das. It was a suicide case. Because the fact that he didn't listen to the halacha that he has to eat, he took his life into his hands. And what do we learn from the stories of the Gaon?
The story where they made Kiddush on Yom Kippur, wasn't that Rabbi Yisrael Salanter who did that?
Oh, yeah. That's an amazing story. There was a cholera epidemic in the city of Salant, I believe it was in Salant, and Rabbi Yisrael on Friday night went from shul to shul. Not on Friday night, I mean on Leil Yom Kippur, I meant to say. It may have been Friday night. And he announced that everyone has to make Kiddush because he was afraid that if people weren't strong, they wouldn't be able to fight off the cholera epidemic.
Well, he wasn't Reb Chaim, he was Musar. So
right.
What do you make of that?
Well, I'll tell you one thing about Rabbi Yisrael is that his halachic Piskei Halacha are very similar to Reb Chaim, you know, in terms of his insistence on the truth. And he felt this was a national pikuach nefesh, you know, of tremendous repercussions. What image or what vision do you get out of the stories of the Gaon? Remember the two stories of the Gaon?
Love of life.
Love of life. What else? And love of life. Why? Yeah, but why? I mean, he says, how beautiful is this world? For one penny, a person can acquire eternal life. What do we have in this world that we don't have in the next world? Mitzvahs. What else? We have the ability to achieve schar. We can create. We can build. This is this world. And in essence, I think this concept that the Rav emphasized about the love of life and being oriented towards this world, this is the Medrash on page 45 that I think perhaps is the center of the entire essay, Ish Halacha, in which the Rav says, based on the Medrash of Rabbi Akiva, that when it came time for Matan Torah, which is very relevant to this time of the year now, on the one hand the Pasuk says that I spoke to you from the heavens, on the other person says that Hashem came down on the mountain. And Rabbi Akiva says that God bent the heavens down to lower them onto the top of the mountain. Says the Rav, Homo religioso, the man of religion, thirsts for God, and he demolishes the bounds of this worldliness, transforms himself into pure spirit, breaks the boundaries of concrete life, ascends on high. His approach to God is a leap from this world into the transcendental world. Not so falachic man. His soul yearns for God. He immerses himself in reality, in this world. He plunges his entire being into the very midst of concrete existence. Petitions that God descend upon the mountain and dwell within the reality of man. And the halacha is meant to give man the ability to create this mishkan, this sanctuary in which the divine presence will enter and bring holiness into the world. So holiness is not the next world, as it is in the religious life, in the religious outlook. Holiness is in this world. And I think, again, all these stories really weave together to form one whole picture. Again, the story about buying hadassim from a Polish woman who demanded the schar of the mitzvah. And what did the Gaon say? Kol yom hayitzdarti. This is the greatest opportune moment. Because again, we're not oriented towards the next world. Yofesh sha'achas b'olam hazeh. The Gaon embraces this world. That's what the Ish Halacha does. He runs away from death. He doesn't want to think about death. He doesn't want to occupy himself with death. If he's afraid of death, as we are, all are, because we're sensitive souls, then run into the world of halacha. Halacha is going to be the representative of life. The mitzvos, the kriyat shema. The Rav points out that the onen, never, when he has contact with dead, therefore he cannot read kriyat shema, because kriyat shema is life. And a person who's completely involved in death, and therefore it's so important for the Rav, as the king of the community, to oversee, to supervise, to guarantee the freedom and the rights of every single Jew, that the rich and the powerful should not subjugate and be mitzayer those who are underprivileged. Therefore, on page 47, we understand very well that the Rav speaks about holiness. And what is holiness? Holiness, says the Rav, is created by man, by flesh and blood, through the power of our mouths. That's called verbal sanctification. We're makdish behemus. Through settlement, we makadish the land of Eretz Yisrael, Jerusalem, the temple courts. And God says to Moses, let them make me a sanctuary. V'asuli migdash v'shachanti v'socham. V'shachanti v'socham. It's unbelievable. It defies human comprehension that the infinite God could find himself dwelling between the 20 boards in the north and 20 in the south, 8 in the west, what we call the Chesodat Tzimtzum, which according to the Anshei Asod means something terrible, you know, that God is mitzamtzim himself. From a halachic point of view, Tzimtzum is the greatest glory, the greatest kedusha, the sanctity of God coming into this world. Everything is oriented towards this world. And therefore, the Ish Halacha will not budge, not one inch, on what he believes is truth for the benefit of man to implement the halacha to its very T. And therefore, the means don't justify the ends. There's no such thing as a mitzvah bob ha'vera. You can't say, well, this is a greater good, and I'll do it for the sake of the greater good. You have to be guided by the halacha. And if the halacha commands you not to do this, then that's exactly what it is. And here I want to review with you some of the stories about Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, because Rav Moshe, in a sense, takes us down a different path in filling in the missing gaps on the vision and the concepts that are so central to the Ish Halacha. So first we turn to page 60 and remind ourselves of this story of Rav Moshe with the Baal Tokea. Do you remember the story? Mm-hmm. Very powerful story. My father was standing in the synagogue on Rosh Hashanah, ready to guide the order of the sounding of the shofar. He was the mashpia, he was the makri. The shofar blower, a God-fearing Chabad Chassid, very knowledgeable in the mystical doctrine of the Alter Rebbe. He knew Likutei Torah, there are insights upon insights of the Alter Rebbe into what shofar is all about, the Kol Shofar, the Shvarim, the Tkiya, the Trua, the Kol Pashut that goes all the way to the Kisei HaKavod, and Hashem goes from the Kisei HaDin to the Kisei HaRachamim. All of a sudden, when Rav Moshe tells him to blow the shofar, The Baal Tokiah starts crying. So my father turned to him and said, "Do you weep when you take the lulav? Why then do you weep when you sound the shofar?" What was Reb Moshe trying to convey to this Baal Tokiah?
This was a mitzvah.
Oh, so I also agree with you. And I think to me that maybe that's what Reb Moshe was saying, a mitzvah is a mitzvah. But I think there's something even deeper. Because what was the Baal Tokiah crying about? More than that. Do you remember the whole discussion again? This is on pages 61 to 63. The Rav has a long discussion about what shofar represents to the Ish HaSod, to the man of mystical thinking. Man's weeping on Rosh Hashanah, according to the doctrine of Tzimtzum, is the weeping of the soul of man that longs to go back to its origin. You know, in Kabbalistic thinking, man is compared to a candle, and his neshama is the flame that's flickering upwards and wants to go back to the Kisei HaKavod. That kind of weeping is unacceptable from the perspective of the Ish Halacha. The Ish Halacha embraces concrete reality. His outlook is focused on this world. And when you say Tzvi, a mitzvah is a mitzvah, the Rav is saying in the name of his father that we're going to have the same simcha for shofar blowing. It's an opportunity to do a mitzvah as we will when we take the lulav. I mean, obviously there are differences. Myriads of differences. But we don't believe that the Sodat Tzimtzum means never that God is Ishchinta Begalusa. That our neshama and our goof is longing to break away from the goof into the, you know, the world of disembodied spirits of transcendentalism. We believe in simcha. And all this fits into an entire picture. But then the Rav tells a story, not about his father, about his father-in-law. Take a look on page 77. Do you remember this story? This is one that sends goosebumps up our, you know, we really shudder from this story. Page 77. What happened? Do you remember, Yosef?
He was in the room, someone was dying.
Who was dying?
His daughter.
His daughter. His daughter was dying, right? And Rav Elia was wrapped in his talis and tefillin. He was praying and davening, and he wanted to know from the doctor how much longer did he have before he became an onan. So what he was is he was able to calculate the amount of time until she would pass on so that he can go and take off his tefillin shel Rashi and put on his tefillin shel Rabbeinu Tam. And after taking off his tefillin shel Rabbeinu Tam, he could be there b'shas yitzias neshama. This is a whole different vision of the Ish Halacha. What kind of personality does he have now in his dedication to Halacha? Which comes first, emotion or thought? Halacha or a natural sense of feeling? Halacha, thinking, the mind. Do you remember this whole discussion about Ish Halacha, how he's opposed to religious subjectivity, to getting carried away with drinking and dancing, if it's not generated by some level of understanding?
We have a story from McGraw, how his son died on Shabbos and he didn't cry until right after Shabbos is over.
Right, and that story again, I don't remember what page it's on, maybe you could find it for me, but again expresses the same idea, that the dedication to Halacha and the understanding that we are put in this world with obligations and commitments to follow Halacha, that comes first. That's primary. And from there, we can move on to emotionalism, to respond to the with feelings, and that's what we can do. The emotions are more powerful, they're more solid, they're more structured, they're more real, they're more long-lasting. Exactly, they're preceded by thought, by understanding, if they're rooted in Allah.
I would think today on that.
Again, it's mind, it's intellect, and then emotion, and then heart. Not in the reverse.
I did hear a story of the Rav.
Have you done the Meyer yet?
Yes. The Rav died around Purim time, or Shlosh was over, and they had to be Mesameach. And he said, "Listen, the halacha says Purim is to be Mesameach. My wife died okay, but the halacha says that it's Purim is Mesameach."
Right. It's an amazing
thing. I heard that he was able to have happiness on Purim.
It's just an amazing thing of inshallah. Really something amazing.
But it sounds...
It sounds, in a sense, very controlled,
robotic.
Very disciplined. Well, I would, you know, the word robotic, I think, is a little extreme because it sounds somewhat callous. But we'll pick this up a little bit later. I'm gonna go to.